It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond along with my buddies, Kyle from the Green Barber. What's up, sir?
What's going on, guys? How are you?
Feeling great for Tuesday. And with my other brother from another mother, and that would be none other than in China Grove, North Carolina. Ladies and gentlemen, he's the man everybody loves, and that is Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, sir?
Doing well, and good evening, guys. That's an awfully rainy Tuesday here in the western part of the state.
Oh, it's great here, man. It's fantastic and beautiful day. I guess we're going to be hit. We get the rain tonight, right, Kyle? So we get the rain tonight.
Tomorrow, and then chance of snow, depending on who you believe, on
Thursday night.
Thursday, so that'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first part of the day wasn't too bad at all, but the weather's gotten worse as the day is worn on.
All right, so we have that to look forward to tonight, being Tuesday night. That means that we'll sleep good tonight if you're in Eastern North Carolina, so that'll be a lot of fun. Guys, tell you what, there's lots to talk about and lots of little time. We'll do our roundtable in just a second. But, Bubba, we have, and Kyle teases me, but we've got a great show.
Yep, we'll hear from East Carolina women's lacrosse coach Amanda Barnes Moore, Mandy Moore, as she goes by on social media.
I love her music.
Yeah, that's funny. She said she had said that to her to some of her athletes, and they just looked at her like she was crazy. Like, who's Mandy Moore?
Elvin Akers.
And then we caught up with a guy that we heard from here just a couple weeks ago on our D1 baseball preview. He had, I guess, at least four or five appearances on the show. Campbell head coach Justin Hare, as the Pirates will travel down to Buies Creek on Wednesday night, 5 o'clock first pitch at Perry Stadium.
Very excited about that matchup, and certainly a great test for the Pirates. We'll be talking a little bit about that later on. Right now, let's do our roundtable. And, gentlemen, this is one of the Christmas Day, if you're an East Carolina football fan, this is one of the days you circle, and it's because the schedule came out today, just a couple hours ago. It's 2 o'clock Tuesday officially when it came out, and definitely we've had a chance to look at it, and I wanted to get both of you guys a chance to talk about it now that you've looked at it, and what are your thoughts? I'll throw it at Bubba first. What do you think about the schedule?
Obviously, some pros and cons as you look at things. We get to play three of our first four games at home. The only game on the road there early in those first four is obviously the road trip to South Carolina, so that's good. That's what I also like, the fact that, yes, we do have three non-Saturday games. I don't like that, but I do like that only one of those three is at home, and that being the September 24th date with UCF. And that is good that the previous Saturday that we're at home against Norfolk State, while UCF will be coming off back-to-back road games. And on the 19th, when we're at home against Norfolk State, they will be in Atlanta taking on Georgia Tech. So that works out well, and certainly something that could lead to a potential Pirate upset. So those are some of the things that jumped out at me. And then I know it was also pointed out that later on in the year that we have to go on the road some to what should be some cold weather games like Cincinnati and so forth.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah, Coach Houston, you're talking about going on the road for cold weather games. Coach Houston always prided himself on winning in the cold when he was at JMU. That was kind of part of their creed. So who knows? Maybe he'll have to use that here this year. But if you're looking at the schedule, I think our September, man, you talk about comparing to last September. It's a daunting task to start off. You got Marshall, who, was an 8-win team last year, a bowl team, almost won the East Division of Conference USA. You got at South Carolina, everybody knows who they are, SEC program, Norfolk State, obviously, not the toughest opponent. But then you got at UCF, one of the best teams in all the so-called Group of Five the last several years, and the kingpin of the American up until this past year, on the Thursday night. Like Bubba pointed out, maybe a scheduling advantage, them having back-to-back road games. We're going to be the third road game in a row for them. And on a short week, the previous week, they played Georgia Tech. So that's kind of interesting. Maybe, who knows, we could pull off an upset there. But at Georgia State, I mean, we already knew we were playing that game, but it's still interesting to see it. Somebody we've never played before, playing them in Atlanta. You know, Navy for homecoming, we were talking about that before we started recording. You know, historically we don't do well against Navy, but who knows, maybe this will be the year we do. You got the other weeknight games, like you thought, like Bubba talked about Tulsa, and Thursday, what was the other weeknight game?
Cincinnati, right?
Yeah, Cincinnati. Yeah. So, you know, it is what it is with the weeknight games, only one of them at home. But you're right, Bubba, when you say some cold weather games at Cincinnati, at Temple, back-to-back weeks in November. So, you know, it has to be tough to play in the cold. It ain't the first time we've done it. And, you know, we need to beat one of those two. Both those schools, you know, we did get Cincy here a couple of years back when they were down, and we did get a win against them. But kind of owe both those schools, particularly Temple. I'm so sick of losing them, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I remember that day pretty well.
My request to win over Temple.
What, six straight?
Yeah, going back to when we first got in the league. I mean, it's,
starting with that miserable day back in, what was it, early November, something like that? Yeah, late October, early November.
We were ranked.
Day. Yeah, we were ranked, 16. And then go up there to Philly, and needless to say, didn't play our best football.
Yeah, something I pointed out to you guys earlier. Looking back at this. We're going to have to this year if we want to get to 6-6, but we haven't won back-to-back games against FBS opponents since 2015 against SMU and Virginia Tech.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
So that's the last time we did back-to-back against FBS opponents. I mean, we won back-to-back last year, but it was FCS and FBS with William and Mary and Old Dominion in back-to-back weeks.
And that just goes to show about this program. I wanted to say to you guys once again.
Oh, was that even consecutive, guys? I might remember that wrong. That might not even have been back-to-back. I don't remember.
Well, just the fact that with this whole thing is that Mike Houston definitely is a great coach, and I think the schedule is very tough. You look at that first month, I could argue both ways. I could argue that we could be 3-1, and I could also argue that we could be 1-3. That's going to be interesting. September to see how that plays out. I'm very excited, gentlemen, that we've talked about it a lot off the air, but that very first game is going to be a very emotional game, being the very first game of the home season, obviously, but also it's the 50th anniversary, not the actual date, but 50 years since the plane crash with Marshall. The actual date is November 14th, 1970, and we're going to work on something special this year to honor that plane crash, but that team and East Carolina, and we'll give a shout out to our friend John Casaza too, who has come on the podcast and is a fan of the show. I know how emotional people like him and different people, but that Marshall game should be played a lot, if nothing else, for the significance of what happened. Unfortunately, it's unfortunate that our two schools are linked to one of the worst events ever, and especially you hate it for them, what happened. But that certainly is a great way, I think, to start the season. It's going to be amazing. And at South Carolina, I'm just tickled to death that we're on the schedule, and I'm hoping, I trust John Gilbert. He's telling us that in 21, Kyle, that they're coming here. So isn't that right, 21?
Next, I believe
they're coming here. Yeah. They're coming here, and we will keep Ray Tanner is going to keep his word in Columbia, and they're coming here. They're not going to buy it, but he's not going to – no, they're not buying out the game, so they can forget that. John Gilbert said that he's not going to let them buy it out. So they'll be here, and the Gamecocks will be in Greenville. That's going to be fantastic next year. But let's talk about this year. The homecoming is going to be fantastic. We'll make that – you know, what else can you do? And then overall, the schedule is I think it's really good. And by the way, folks, to get your season tickets, only $99 starting out. I mean, what a great price, $99.
Yeah. I look at the schedule overall, and I hate the UCF on a Thursday night, except for the reason we discussed where it could be an advantage for an upset, because I think it would draw well. It's an appealing schedule to me. Yeah, there's not the the eye-popping Virginia Tech or North Carolina or North Carolina State or West Virginia at home, but Marshall's an appealing home game. UCF's an appealing home game. Navy's an appealing home game. So, yeah. I mean, it's not a bad schedule at all for what it is. You mentioned 21 and South Carolina coming to Greenville. Something else that kind of broke the day.
Evidently, thank you.
2021, East Carolina and Appalachian State was supposed to play in Charlotte. But evidently now it's, you know, that's, they've just decided to book another. They've double booked the stadium, Bubba.
Yeah, that's what one of my Appalachian friends earlier today reached out to me and said, have you seen this? I think it was what Georgia and Clemson have been slated to play September 4th, 2021 at Bank of America Stadium. So this was from Brett McMurphy.
Yeah,
obviously formerly of ESPN and now just independent, or is it
he worked for Stadium, yeah.
So he had been independent for a while, but then now with Stadium. That in that tweet, he said, it will be the first meeting of Clemson and Georgia since 2014, but we don't care about that. But East Carolina and App State, originally scheduled for September 4th, could move to Thursday, September 2nd, or another date, the source says. So.
Yeah, you know, what I would do right now, if we're going to keep that in Bank of America Stadium, and, you know, I don't know if we could play it somewhere else at this point. If we could play it somewhere else, I'd like to tell them to go screw themselves. But if we're going to keep it there, I think let's turn a negative into a positive. Let's get John Gilbert to get together with App State's AD. And let's petition the NCAA to let us move into week zero, even though we don't play at Hawaii.
We don't have a game with Hawaii.
That's supposed to be the rules. You're supposed to play Hawaii to have a game on week zero, but they let Florida and Miami move their game to Camping World Stadium last year to week zero. So because of the unusual circumstances, let's move to week zero. Let's be one of the only games on. Let's make
that's
it
a great idea.
Game. And let's play it the weekend before get really good television coverage and a lot of attention. And the only game in the state, it would get a lot of eyeballs. So, let's get John Gilbert on the phone and talk to him about that. I don't know what the Panthers, who knows what the Panthers preseason schedule, if it would allow that. But if it would, I think we should do it. I think it be a big draw and get us a lot of attention.
Do you want me to call David Tepper?
Go ahead.
I said, do you want me to call David Tepper, the owner of the Panthers, and make that happen?
If you know him like that, absolutely.
Sure, get him on the line.
I don't, but I do know Mick Mixon, so the play-by-play voice of the Panthers. Maybe I could call him and say, Mick, can you help me? Can you help a brother out?
Yeah, Mick probably has much pull with Go ahead, Bubba.
I was going to ask you guys, you obviously see games, teams making adjustments in their schedule to accommodate people they're in contracts with. Like, for instance, the Pirates, we were supposed to play the Hokies, I think it was in 2012, but they were, at that time, obviously the programs were on good terms in terms of just working with one another, and so Terry Holland worked with Virginia Tech, and so they had that long-term deal with the Pirates, so they had the opportunity, Virginia Tech did, to play Alabama in the kickoff game in Atlanta. So we made some adjustments there, and so I've seen that kind of stuff happen, but I don't recall seeing anything. I'm sure it has, but have y'all seen anything like this where a game's been scheduled for a stadium and then it's been bumped out just because the other game is more high profile?
Sort of. Georgia State used to play at the Georgia Dome, and they had to move their opening home game against Abilene Christian back in 2014 to Thursday night to a Wednesday night, actually. Because the stadium was going to be used Friday. No, the stadium was going to be used Thursday and Saturday for different kickoff games, Bubba. There was two kickoff games that weekend, and they actually moved it to a Wednesday night.
Wow.
The two games in Atlanta that weekend that were being used at the Georgia Dome. So that's the only example I have. But as far as it being a stadium that does nothing but, you know, it's not anybody's home stadium. They knew damn well they had that game scheduled with East Carolina and App State. You know, I guess Georgia and Clemson is paying them a lot of money to play that there, because obviously it's just not ticket sales, because Appalachian and East Carolina is going to pack that.
Oh, my God. That place. Yeah, exactly. That place.
So they must be making a lot of money from whoever's promoting the game or the two schools.
TV, maybe?
Certainly TV. Yeah, good point. So, you know, it is what it is. I'm sure John Gilbert and the AD at App are a little pissed right now, but the week zero thing I think is a good idea.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to text Ryan Robinson right now, and we'll see if we can. jokingly, but, you know, stranger things have happened, and I'm sure things will be worked out. And unfortunately, too, and another thing that I'm disappointed about this whole situation is the very fact that look what year we're in. We're in February 2020, and that game, even though people say, Dave, it's September 21, and you guys know, and there's a lot of people listen to podcasts because they're smart, and they know that scheduling is done many years in advance. So it's not like something, as we found out with the wonderful folks in Blacksburg and the wonderful folks in Columbia, that when you pull out on us and you don't have a game, it's a bad situation. And so, right. Not that Appalachian is, I'm just saying that.
No, the game will be played. It's just, do you play it on Thursday? I don't like that idea.
No.
I think that's not good for the fans. Whereas I think doing it week zero would be fantastic for the fans and for all parties involved, really. I think you could turn a negative into a positive. I think the only thing that would keep that from happening would be, again, the Panthers' preseason schedule. But maybe they could work around it. The preseason games will have to be played on Saturday. Maybe if they have a preseason game at home that week, don't play it on Saturday. Play it on a different game or a different day. That's what I'd like to see done. Hey, guys, something else. So switch gears a little bit here. Unfortunate news coming out of Greensboro with former East Carolina head coach Billy Godwin suffering a stroke.
Yeah, very sad situation, but I understand that I guess he's recovering at home, obviously. And, you know, I guess in one respect, Kyle, you and I were talking about this last night, the very fact that it's a tough deal that you have it happen at the stadium, but that's probably the best place it could happen, right? I mean, we were talking about that last night.
If you got to have something like that happen, it's better to happen around a lot of people where you can get immediate medical treatment. Obviously, it happened at a baseball park. He was able to get help right away. He wasn't sitting in a hotel room by himself late at night, you know, on a bus somewhere, or, you know, in the middle of nowhere on the highway. He was in the stadium where he could get to a hospital in a hurry. And so, you know, if you want to look at a positive from a very negative situation, that would be it. I don't know how he is or anything. I haven't heard any updates. I don't know if y'all have. But wish him nothing but the best. Thoughts and prayers to Billy and his family. And hopefully he'll be back in the dugout or on third base. I can't remember if he coached third base or if he coached on the dugout. But either way, hopefully he'll be back coaching soon.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I'm sure he being a great person, and he seems to be in pretty good shape. We hope that he'll bounce back pretty fast, no doubt. Our thoughts and prayers with the family. And by the way, something else you and our Kyle were talking about last night. We actually have we'll be recording the podcast, our sister podcast, Talking Racing with Mike Ray, our spinoff, if you will.
Yeah.
What in the world went on in NASCAR last night? That was unbelievable.
Yeah,
Daytona 500.
I don't really watch Daytona anymore. Denny Hamlin winning it, but I saw that wreck, you know, came across on my a lot of news feeds and all, and saw the wreck. And, you know, when I saw how bad the wreck was, you see bad wrecks in NASCAR, but it wasn't just how bad the wreck was. It was the way it was treated. with the black screens being put up, and from what I was told, media was told to leave Pitt Row. I really thought the worst. I think a lot of people did. But thankfully, Ryan Newman, I haven't heard any updates today, but non-life-threatening, critical injury, very serious, but non-life-threatening.
I do have an update on him. This afternoon, there was an alert from ESPN. He's up, talking, speaking. Very happy to hear that. Yes, he's labeled in serious condition, but thank God, non-life-threatening. So still things are, obviously, I'm sure it's a lot worse than what we know, but at the same time, it's not non-life-threatening. So I'm very tickled about that because, Kyle, you're right. When I saw that and then you called me and we're talking about the Billy Godwin situation and obviously about those two things. And I was upset, of course, for Coach, and then very upset for Ryan Newman, who was on my radio show about 10 years ago. Great guy. I had a fun time talking to him. Anytime you can talk NASCAR, I'm all for it. A really nice guy. So the fact that he was on my show, not only that, but just knowing, working at a local racetrack, knowing what those guys, men, women, and racing go through,
just the human element. I mean, he's got two daughters. In fact, ironically enough, you know, looking at his Facebook page last night while I was trying to get updates, I seen where he had just released a statement Thursday. Him and his wife were separating. So, people have stuff going on in their lives, and he has two young daughters, and obviously going through a separation right now with his wife, and you hate to see it. It is part of auto racing, man. Everybody remembers Earnhardt getting killed. Kyle Petty's son, Adam Petty. Everybody remembers him getting killed. There was another driver. There was two or three drivers that got killed up at Loudoun, New Hampshire. It was Adam Petty, and I'm having trouble remembering the other guy.
Yeah, you're right.
Mike Ray would know. But it's a lot of guys have been killed over the years. Neil Bonnet.
Alan Kowicki was
Alan was a helicopter driver.
Helicopter, I'm just saying, but there's Davey Allison.
Four is on the track. Davey was also a plane crash. But
Four
is on the track dying. Those are the ones that come to mind. And, of course, Earnhardt being the most well-known. But go ahead, Bubba.
Sorry. Obviously, you guys know I don't follow racing very closely, but I remember very well when that happened to Dale Earnhardt Sr. and 19 years ago now?
2001,
Yeah, 19 years ago. Just going back when I heard the news about Ryan Newman last night and I saw his crash, I got on YouTube and watched Earnhardt's crash again. Seeing Newman's crash and the fact that he's obviously not doing well, but serious but stable condition, and looking at Earnhardt's crash is just kind of crazy. Just the way technology and the way the cars, how much better NASCAR has gotten in 19 years.
The Honda device was a huge, huge step forward. It kind of became a mandatory thing after the Earnhardt crash. Obviously, the cars get safer every year. And also, Bubba wish we could have Mike on right now. When you see, you almost want a car. Obviously, you don't want a car to rip apart like that one did. But you kind of in NASCAR, you want to see a car roll more so than just slam head first in that wall to a dead stop. That's never good, like what happened with Earnhardt. But it was a bad looking crash last night. It hit the wall head on. Kind of like Earnhardt did, and then rolled, and it looked terrible. Thank God he survived. And I'd love to know more details about why. Did they have to give him CPR? What was the reason why they chose to put up that black screen, those black screens to shield the crowd from seeing Ryan? And what was the reason? Media was told to get away from that area. It makes me think that there was some CPR given, I don't know that to be fact, but there had to be a reason why they did that. That's not normal procedure.
On a much lighter note, guys, I know here in just a moment we need to get our interview with the head coach of the Campbell Camels, Justin Hare. But before we do that, a couple baseball notes. The Pirates in the polls this week, they're as high as 16th, anywhere from 16th to 25th, I believe. That 16th is in the NCBWA poll, which is the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association. The biggest jump, however, came in the collegiate baseball poll, because obviously that was the one that had us at 36th. We jumped to 23rd. So go figure.
Yeah, somebody listened to our podcast.
But also, Thomas Francisco, what a opening weekend he had. The sophomore lefty.
Oh, yeah.
5 of 8 at the plate and reached base 8 out of 11 plate appearances. And just an unbelievable opening weekend for him. He was named the American Athletic Conference Player of the Week.
I was going to say, when I heard his numbers, I knew they were great. I was thinking about that and saw that. I was like, there's no way that anybody can have a better weekend than him in the conference.
But like I mentioned in the open, the Pirates will be down in Buies Creek at Perry Stadium on Wednesday at 5 o'clock, taking on the Campbell Camels. If you cannot make it out, you can watch by going to Campbell's website, and they will have an ESPN Plus feed, or you can obviously listen on TuneIn Radio or 94.3 The Game to Corey Glore call the action. But right now, let's hear from Justin Hare about two ball clubs that are very familiar with one another as the Pirates and Campbell Camels prepare to square off on Wednesday afternoon.
It's baseball season, first midweek game, like we're talking about extra innings, as always with the next team that we're going to talk about and their head coach.
Yep, of course, the Campbell Camels, and that's who the Pirates will be playing on Tuesday afternoon down at Jim Perry Stadium in Buies Creek. And right now we're rejoined by a friend of the show, Justin Hare, the head coach of the Camels. Coach, welcome back.
Hey, Coach.
Thanks, guys. Hey, how y'all doing? Thank y'all for having me on again, man. Just feel like we could just do this weekly, you know. If you got
anytime you want to come on the show, you can. Anytime you want, you can be a regular spot with us.
Perfect. I'm in. You guys just let me know, and I'm in anytime you guys need me. Again, appreciate you guys having me, and get a chance to talk about this week's game and our program anytime. So.
But Coach, we caught up, like you're saying, here a couple weeks ago, but now that your ball club's played three games, unfortunately 1-2, but three very entertaining games. Just looking at the box scores, I wasn't able to watch any of them, but just you fell 1-0 on Friday, and then Saturday you played a doubleheader, dropped a 12-10 decision before bouncing back 7-3 in the nightcap. So, and just tell us about your ball club through three ball games and some of your takeaways from opening weekend.
Yeah, obviously had an opportunity to challenge ourselves, go down to University of South Alabama and, you know, play a top 25. And some polls, you know, a couple of polls, they're in the top 25. I think maybe they were 23rd coming into this weekend. Go down there and play them on the road. Friday night, opening day, man, they got, I think Nightingale, their guys, conference pitcher of the year last year, coming back as a senior, really good, good stuff. And we got a guy named Cam Cowan going, junior transfer for us. And, man, just a pitcher's duel back and forth. Cam's goes into the ninth. We left like 9 guys on base, and he's 8 1/3, struck out 15, giving up 3 hits, and leadoff guy ends up turning, hitting a fastball out to walk us off in the bottom of the ninth, 1-0. So, really good game, really well played game kind of across the board, not very offensive, obviously, but, really, really evenly matched game. Saturday game one, they got up 8-4. We hit a grand slam, tied it up, go ahead 10-8. In the eighth, and then, you know, our bullpen kind of faltered there a little bit, and we ended up giving up a 4 spot in the eighth. It was a fairly sloppy game, basically the direct opposite of what it was like on Friday night. And then we were able to bounce back game 3 and take a 7-3 win there. I was talking with Mark Calvi, their head coach, yesterday a little bit, actually, and he's like, yeah, man, like, you know, we're, I'm glad we got two out of three, but I'm, you know, felt like we were probably about five pitches away from getting swept, and we might have been five or, you know, 10 pitches away from sweeping. So it was a very evenly matched series and a good challenge for our guys. Certainly wish we would have come out with the series win. Felt like that was within our grasp. And we played well enough to do that. We just didn't get the big hit on Friday night when we had a chance to, and just didn't hold down the fort a little bit on Saturday game one. But we put it together a little bit better game three and got out of there with a win certainly some things to work on and build on as we move into the midweek.
You talked about game one, obviously a pitcher's duel, but then in games two and three, you had double digit hits in both of those games, 10 in game one and then 11 in game three. So just talk about some of the leaders offensively.
Yeah. Colin Wolf had a really good weekend, especially, you know, games two and three on Saturday. Our leadoff guy, Waldy Arias, who basically he's a sophomore, maybe got 10 or 12 at-bats last year, put together a bunch of really quality at-bats. Spencer Packard in the middle of our lineup there, he maybe had one hit on the weekend, but strung together some really good at-bats. They pitched him really tough, intentionally walked him once. I mean, he did some nice things and was able to pressure with some good at-bats. And then we just had some big knocks and some random stuff. Zach Williams, a transfer from Bakersfield College, put together a good weekend, had a big grand slam for us in game two. Matt Christian hit a home run for us in game three. Marcus Skundrick, a senior catcher, put together a bunch of really quality at-bats and caught really well. So had a bunch of different guys get in there and get an opportunity, and some guys flourished, some guys struggled. But some of those seniors that we're counting on to kind of carry us a little bit, really, really responded well as the weekend went along, and was good to see those guys put together a bunch of really productive and quality at-bats.
You talked about the tremendous start that you received out of Cam Callen. Mm-hmm. I know on Saturday in game one, I believe you used six relievers, and then your bullpen in game two came in and after getting a solid start out of Kevin Westlake, the bullpen really closed the door. So talk about what you learned about your pitching depth this weekend.
Yeah, it's crazy that, we come back and take the lead 10-8 on Saturday, game one, I should say, on Saturday. And we've got basically most of our senior returning guys, Landry Moore's in the game, who closed a bunch of games for us last year. We got Jonathan Tyler in the bullpen. So we've got some bullets, in the gun with Cam going complete game in game one. I'm like, all right, man, like we got six outs to go, man. We got, two or three seniors that have been in the fire and that we're counting on to be our guys this year. And unfortunately those guys didn't get it done for us in game one. They faltered a little bit there in that eighth inning, which was unexpected, and disappointing. But the silver lining of that was in game two, when we had a lead in the late innings, we went to some different guys. We went to freshman Brendan Wright, redshirt freshman, who's coming off an injury last year, and he came in and gave us three really good innings. Then we went to Jack Yusko and senior sidearm type guy that has been in a lot of games but kind of been up and down, never been a multiple inning guy, and he went out there and gave us one plus and really closed out the game. So some other guys got some opportunities that maybe we weren't necessarily, hey, these are our three or four bullpen guys that we can really count on, which I think, we're still going to count on those seniors. But I think for us to be able to see some of those other guys come in and have some success against a quality opponent, that gives me some more confidence that maybe we've got, maybe we've got a little bit more depth in our bullpen than I thought we did going into opening weekend. We've got some guys that if we put them in the right roles and do some different things, they're going to be able to get us some quality outs and some quality innings over the course of the year. And so for them to jump out there, Brendan Wright, Jack Yusko, John Vanderplug, some of those guys to be able to jump out there and have a little bit of success was really good to see, because I think, any head coach will tell you, if you can lengthen the depth of your bullpen, now all of a sudden you feel like you've got options and you don't have to run the same four or five guys out there. And by the time you get to May and June, those dudes are out of gas and you're just, hoping you can outscore some people. So if we can lengthen out some of that bullpen depth, I think we'll have a chance to be okay. And so it was good to see some of that stuff from from some of those unproven guys this weekend.
And Coach, with having said that, with pitching is key, what about this weekend? I know you have a – we'll talk about East Carolina, but also in addition to East Carolina, we'll come back to that, you also have on the schedule a lot of games in the Buies Creek Fayetteville area, starting with the Campbell Invitational.
Yeah, so this weekend we got Purdue coming in. We play them Friday night, which is my former boss, Greg Goff. Our former pitching coach, Chris Marks, is their pitching coach first year up there with the Boilermakers. So we got a little bit of a family reunion Friday night with those guys. And then we got Villanova, who knocked off Arizona State, a game out in Tempe this past weekend. And we've got Maine coming in. So we got a four-team round robin, which my coaching staff always thanks me for, because that's three scouting reports for one weekend, and that's a lot of time and effort that they put into getting ready and getting our guys prepared for that. So should be exciting, should be a good weekend of baseball and fun, though challenging to see some familiar faces in the dugouts across the way from us. And then next weekend, we don't have a midweek next week because we've got a four-game weekend. So we've got Army and Air Force coming in and the Armed Forces Classic. First year that the Fayetteville Woodpeckers are putting that together. Obviously with Fort Bragg being right there and Pope Air Force Field and all that kind of stuff, there's a lot of Army, a lot of Air Force enlisted guys that live in that area and want to try to tap into that, and awesome opportunity to play our service academies. They both happen to be really good teams. So should be a good weekend of baseball. Got four down there, two against Army, two against Air Force. So should be really awesome. Should be a great atmosphere. I think they're doing fireworks Friday night and Saturday night and trying to make it a big event and get a bunch of people out. So looking forward to that and got some good games on the schedule here the next couple of weeks.
Coach, I believe your ball club just committed one error over the weekend. Obviously, in game one, 15 out of the 25 outs came via a strikeout. But after that, it seems, though, just looking at the numbers, that you played pretty good defense. What were your thoughts on that aspect?
Yeah, I think, Bubba, we talked about this, a couple weeks ago, as we were driving home from the Greenville Regional up there, I felt like that was an area that we needed to get better. I felt like East Carolina was clearly better than us on the defensive side of things, and that was an area that we needed to put a lot of focus into, playing better defense, being in the right position more often, and doing some of that stuff. And so that's an area that we put a lot of emphasis on in the fall and in the preseason that we wanted to get better at, and we misplayed one ground ball on the weekend and everything else we played pretty clean. So that's an area that we feel like, if we want to win, if we want to have a chance to be playing in June, if we want to have a chance to maybe take that next step as a program, we've got to continue to improve there and play high level defense and a high level of catch. And we were able to do that this weekend, and that'll be something that we continue to work on a day-by-day basis and really harp on with our guys, because I think if we can defend and we can throw strikes, we're going to be in a lot of ball games and give ourselves a chance to win some games late.
Coach, as we sit here on Monday morning, to my knowledge, I don't believe Cliff Godwin has announced a starter for tomorrow afternoon, so have you decided who you will go with?
Yeah, I think we're going to start sophomore right-hander, a kid named Zach Adams. Didn't throw a ton for us last year, threw out of the bullpen some. He's from Maryland, young guy, good arm, up and down freshman year, has a lot of talent and has pitched well in the preseason here. But we'll probably throw, we may throw five or six different guys, but he's going to get the ball to start it off and go out there and hopefully give us a good solid start, and then we'll throw a number of different bullpen guys in there and mixed up depending on matchups, and all of our guys are fairly fresh playing the doubleheader on Saturday, and some of those bullpen guys didn't last very long, unfortunately, Saturday afternoon, so they'll be ready to get back up on the mound and get back in the fire on Wednesday, but you know, with the doubleheader Saturday, we had off yesterday, and then, you know, we'll get a chance to practice a little bit today and tomorrow, you know, be ready to go Wednesday night.
Now, Coach, and kind of an interesting nugget as far as your pitching staff is concerned. I was looking over the roster, and I saw 6'5", 235, 6'5", 245, 6'5", 240, 6'3", 250. I didn't know if I was looking at the baseball roster or the depth chart for defensive end, but I was like, holy cow. I said, what are you feeding them down there, Coach?
Well, we got a really good strength guy named Matt Rodriguez, who's a stud, and I believe in physicality. I think, you know, when you turn on the TV at the end of June and you see the last eight teams playing, you know, you don't see a bunch of 5'10" right-handers or left-handers out there on the mound. You'll see some, and those guys are really good. But I think when you see the top teams in the country playing, you see physical guys on the mound and in the lineup and stuff. And that's been kind of a calling card of the way we recruit and the type of guys that we want to get in, you know, in the lineup and on the mound. I guess if you can't beat them, you should try to scare them maybe a little bit. I don't know. Want to make sure that we've got some guys that look the part in the uniform, but most importantly, we want them to go out there and feel strong and feel confident, and be able to go out there and compete their tails off because they paid the price in the weight room. They've made nutrition a big part of their life and a sacrifice where, hey man, maybe that Bojangles biscuit might sound good, but you know, the scrambled eggs and the yogurt and the bagel might be the better option. So, having guys that buy into that mentality of really trying to put themselves in a position and make some sacrifices nutritionally in the weight room. I think that gives them some confidence. I think that allows them to go out there and compete to the best of their ability because they've you know, made the sacrifices to prepare to go out there and be successful.
And, Coach, that actually is great that you're doing that because Bubba and I love Bojangles, so that means more biscuits for us.
Hey, that's right. Hey, just snag a couple of the tickets. You guys should come down Wednesday night, snag some tickets. You probably get a free tip, you know, one of those Cajun chicken fillets or whatever showing a ticket from our game on Wednesday night. At Bojangles. So you guys come on down and get a couple tickets and you guys will get some Bojangles after.
Coach, also, I was just going to say one more thing is we talked to a lot of baseball experts, including Stu Murray from College Baseball 365 and others, and they always brag about you and they always brag about the facilities from being a great recruiter that you are. Can you talk a little bit about that? We were talking about your ballpark and other things there at Campbell.
Yeah, we've been fortunate to be able to have a bunch of growth as a school, but also, with our facility and had the opportunity to host the Astros. I know I shouldn't say that. I know the Astros are very taboo right now and nobody wants to claim them, but I had an opportunity to have their single A team here for 2 years and they helped us get turf. But we also were able to expand our facility and put up a video board and us in East Carolina actually have the same exact video board, same size, same definition, same company, the whole deal, which is pretty cool. I think for us, just continue to improve in every aspect of our program, you know, whether it's facilities wise, whether it's strength and conditioning wise, athletic training wise, we've been able to get some really good staff members. We added a berm out in right field and lowered our right field fence and added two hills out in right field to try to create some more fan friendly spots. Redid a deck that we have in left and put a, looking to expand some of that stuff as well. Just, we wanted to make it fan friendly. We want to make it recruit friendly. We want to make it developmental friendly, and be able to provide the best experience for our student athletes. And I think that's a really important piece in today's recruiting culture and what it takes to be successful at the highest level of Division I baseball. You got to have good players, but you also got to be able to develop those guys. And so there's a balance between wanting it to look good for sure, but also wanting it to be super functional. And we've been fortunate enough to try to find that balance and keep pushing those limits where We want new things every year. We want to add something new every year. We want to give our guys a new experience or our fans a new experience on a year-by-year basis. And hopefully we can keep winning and, you know, keep having the opportunity to add things to our stadium and add things to our program where, you know, where our guys get a first-class experience and fans love coming to watch us play and hopefully play the right way.
Now, Coach, specifically looking at tomorrow night, and these are two programs that are extremely familiar with one another, meeting in the midweek last year as well as twice in the Greenville Regional. And so after the Pirates collected a sweep over William & Mary over the weekend, winning three different types of ball games, just tell us what you know about Cliff Godwin's ball club.
Well, I haven't watched a bunch of them yet. You know, I'll start digging into some video and some stuff later on today and into tomorrow and Wednesday morning. I know this, they'll be very well coached. They'll play very hard, and they'll be prepared, you know, and so I know, and they'll be talented. That's a given. That's never a question with those guys. So, I know that this first midweek game, as long as we've been playing it, I always know that it's a pretty good barometer for maybe where we are because I know where they're going to be. I know they're going to be prepared. I know they're going to be well coached. I know they're going to be talented. And so, you know, it's a very good measuring stick for us. And, you know, I think that, we do know each other. We are probably more familiar with each other than probably either of us wants to be or likes to be because, you know, I think we both have a lot of respect for each other's programs and do love playing those guys, but it is always a hard fought, battle and you know, we're looking forward to them getting over here later this week and seeing where we are and seeing if we can, match up and get after those guys a little bit.
Looks like, Coach, the weather is going to be a little bit better where you have, I think, rain in the morning time. I was just looking at the forecast, but looks like in the afternoon time it's going to be better. And obviously, anytime Campbell and East Carolina play, it looks like it's a hard ticket to get, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, I think there's obviously a lot of excitement around, you know, the success that our program certainly had over the last couple of years. So, and it's our home opener. We were on the road this past weekend. It looks like it's going to be, you know, in the 50s with, you know, hopefully the rain's going to be out of here in the morning. And so we should be good with the turf and stuff in the afternoon. And East Carolina is always a really good draw. Anytime, they come to town, whether it's, you know, 40 and rainy or 60 and sunny, it seems like it's a good ticket. A lot of connections between our two schools and similar areas and all those sorts of things. And then obviously with, you know, with last year at the regional and all that kind of stuff should be a tough ticket, should be a really good crowd. Hopefully we come out and you know, embrace that atmosphere and, you know, play well and hopefully we have a good chance to win that game late.
Well, if the fans make it out and they'll they see anything like what took place last year in Buies Creek, they'll certainly be in for a treat as the Campbells walked off the Pirates 7-6 after East Carolina rallied in the late innings.
Yeah, a little back and forth game there, and you know, we got up a little bit early, and you know, it's crazy. The most impressive part about that game is we had a guy. Starting for us, guy named Seth Johnson, who ended up being the 40th overall pick in the draft. And he comes out in the first, and he's 95, 97 in the first. It's 40 and rainy and cold and kind of gross out. Well, then, you know, East Carolina runs out Gavin Williams in the first. So our guy's 95, 96 in the first. Gavin comes out. He's like 95, 97 in the first. And I look at the third baseman and I say, well, yeah, I mean, of course, it's a typical Tuesday midweek. You know, or midweek, you know, first midweek of February game, you know, two right-handers out there mid to upper 90s, right? Like, no big deal, you know, and that was the most impressive thing, I think, in terms of just where college baseball is going to. And you know, you sit back and watch, you know, the development of East Carolina's program, certainly, but our program as well. And just seeing the type of players that are coming out of our programs and running through there. You come out to watch either of our programs, you're going to see some guys that are eventually going to play in the big leagues. You're going to see some guys that are going to go on and have pro careers and have a chance to do some really special things. And so that's a fun part for me as a coach to kind of take that, you know, 10,000 foot view and think, man, are you kidding me? We got two right-handers out here, 40, rainy, and we got guys out here throwing 95 to 98 miles an hour in the first inning. It's unbelievable reflection of college baseball and our two programs being, you know, in the mix with that kind of stuff. But I hope a lot of people come out and see some good baseball. And two things, you know, one, they're going to play hard, and two, we're going to play hard. And you know, that was showcased as we go back over there at the end of the year and they walk us off on a squeeze bunt, you know, in the bottom of the ninth over there, the last midweek of the year. So two walk-offs and then, you know, squaring up in the regional, you know, championship game. So, you know, some fun matchups and some really good players on the field last year. And so hopefully we get to see a lot of the same this year as well.
And folks can actually go to the website, gocamels.com, to find out more about the baseball program and maybe some tickets. And Coach, how can they follow you on social media?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter and Instagram both at jhaire03. So jhaire03, both on Twitter and Instagram. And gocamels_BSB, or maybe it's just gocamelsBSB, on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram for Campbell Baseball. So, yeah, man, a lot of, would love to have a good crowd out and you know, really appreciate you guys having us on and you know, getting a chance to talk about our program and looking forward to hooking up with the Pirates on Wednesday night.
Thank you very much, Coach Hare. Yeah, Justin is fantastic and he wants to come on Bubba and Kyle every week. So, certainly we can accommodate him. He's been very good to us.
Are we becoming a Campbell podcast?
No, but he's been a very good friend so far. And certainly many more. He'll be on at least, we know, he'll be on at least, one more time.
You know, him being down
you could definitely have some interesting name possibilities with a Campbell podcast.
Indeed. we can do it on Wednesdays and call it the Hump Day Podcast. I don't know. But with him being down in the Boys Creek, Lillington area there, do you think he can hook us up with the guys from Good Mythical Morning? I don't know if you guys are familiar with that YouTube show, but.
No, I'm not aware. I'll have to check it out.
Brent and Rhett, you guys, oh man, they're I've been watching them for years on their show out of Los Angeles and did not realize until recently that they were from the Lillington area there, by Boys Creek. And, they did the commercial a few years ago, at the Red House for White People and Black People Buy Furniture.
I'm lost. I'll have to.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry.
Check it out. I love you too.
I thought you guys know what I'm talking about, but
I'm lost.
Forget I said anything.
Okay, let's go to our next guest, Bubba. Well, we had a chance, Bubba and I did, Bubba did solo, and he actually had a chance to talk to Coach Amanda Moore, Mandy Moore, and she's not the singer, not the actress. She's a great coach for ECU's women's lacrosse team. They've off to a great start. Let's go to that conversation, Bubba and Coach Moore, right now.
Very excited right now to welcome back to the program ECU's women's lacrosse coach, Amanda Moore. Coach, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Bubba.
Absolutely. We appreciate your time. I know it's obviously a very busy time of year for you. The Pirates are three games into the 2020 season, the third year of ECU women's lacrosse. And let's just start off by taking a general overview and look at the program and talk about where things are headed into your third year of competition, but also fourth year, or really fourth plus year at the helm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's flown by. I can't believe when you say 4 years, I'm like, wow, it's really been that long?
Absolutely, no doubt about it, and it's hard to believe. I know year one you won a couple games, and then last year you won five, and were much more competitive on the whole. And this year you're off to a 2-1 start, lost a very competitive opener down at Furman, a team that won the Southern Conference, if I'm not mistaken, a season ago, 14-11 defeat in that one. But then you bounce back with the 19-9 win at Presbyterian, and then most recently on Saturday picked up a 20-5 win over Wofford. So talk about things thus far in 2020.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, our season started out, like you said, against a really tough Furman team, a team that we would anticipate seeing in their conference championship in 2020. It was great, a great test for us just to open up and see some good competition on both ends of the ball and systems that, you know, we needed to get prepared for. Disappointed with the outcome, but I think out of that game, we saw a lot of fight and we saw a lot of girls emerge, and we had a lot of young players on the field for us again, even though it's our third year and we haven't necessarily graduated anyone out of our roster yet. We still have an insurgence of young players. I think at one point we had five true freshmen, two redshirt freshmen on the field. You know, and then to turn around quick and have a solid win against Presbyterian was great, great start to our season. And then this past weekend coming out, and just kind of taking care of business, against Wofford, a team that's, similar to us, was just a strong start.
And just taking a look, you mentioned that roster makeup, a very strong junior class, 15 out of your 35 ladies are in that junior class, just two seniors. I mean, that's not surprising given this third year of competition, like I've already mentioned, but, so just taking a look at that, and I know you have 11 different states represented, but 20 of those 35 ladies are from either Maryland or states to the north of Maryland, like New Jersey, New York, Delaware, and obviously Pennsylvania as well. So just talk about that, because obviously this is a sport that's been more prevalently played in the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast regions. So talk about the way it's filtered south.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the sport of lacrosse, I think it's true for men's and women's, is predominantly still focused up in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic area. That's where you have, you know, kids getting out there at a really young age and, you know, fortunately or unfortunately specializing in lacrosse a little bit earlier. They just have been the traditional hotbed. So we do have a good chunk of our roster and our recruiting is up north. We're fortunate that ECU is a school that, you know, really attracts itself well. And lends itself well. Players want to come south and play lacrosse. And I think that the sport itself has just absolutely exploded in southern states and in what we would consider non-traditional areas, such as Texas, California, Florida, Georgia, that you're really seeing the growth of the sport nationwide. It's what's happening nationwide is not dissimilar to what's happening here in North Carolina and specifically in the ENC. You know, we've seen a huge increase in youth participation in the sport just in and around Pitt County where we are, which is exciting. It's exciting for our sport. It's exciting for young women's lacrosse players and for us as a staff. Being able to, you know, hopefully continue to recruit our state is exciting.
Talking about recruiting the state of North Carolina, I know you had 7 young ladies from the state, and so essentially 20% of your roster. So talk about that. I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but how many high school programs are there approximately in the state of North Carolina?
You know, I don't know if I would be able to tell you that number. I could tell you the concentrations in our state, you know, of high school sports or high schools that sponsor women's lacrosse is more heavily concentrated in the Triangle and now the Triad area. I know locally here, JHROS does sponsor women's lacrosse. I believe Conley has a club team. But then you don't typically see it until you get to the Wilmington area, where there's another good pocket. Wilmington, Outer Banks, Codaville Hills have some programs there across the state. But I mean, I'm just looking at, still looking at some of the stats from this past weekend. I mean, we had a North Carolina native with a hat trick for us this past weekend. So I do know that from a recruiting standpoint, you know, at ECU, we want to keep the best North Carolina players in the state. We feel like we've done that successfully. I know that we have probably more North Carolina natives on our roster than our Division I counterparts in state. And we like that. We want to be extremely competitive, especially in our recruiting process anywhere across the board nationwide, but especially as it pertains to keeping the best players in North Carolina in North Carolina.
Let's talk about some of those top players. I know just looking at the statistics and numbers, you talked about what some of the ladies have done in that 20-5 win over Wofford. I know Megan Palazzi, that's what she had, five goals in that one. And then I think you, if I saw correctly, you had five players with three or more goals in that victory over the Terriers. And then I also know Nicole Lagar and also Megan Trinitsky, the three of them have been some of your leaders thus far.
Absolutely. I mean, you just start Megan Palazzi. I mean, what a day. I know our staff had kind of been waiting for her to have one of those days, making the transition from midfield to offense, and really just kind of happy for her to be able to do what we know that she's capable of doing, you know, and huge confidence boost here for her. She's also one of our team captains, and I think all of her teammates and our staff would say one of the hardest workers as well. So she, I mean, really just a strong performance for us there on the attack. And then Nicole Lagar, she's a junior for us. She's a starting midfielder and just does a lot. Not even just the point production that you've seen from a goals and assists standpoint, but on the draw circle in between the 30s, you know, defensively, just being really solid team defender and 1v1 defender. You know, just a very well-rounded, true two-way midi there for us. And then Megan Trinitsky, who's had a great start to the season, really does a good job for us controlling the ball at X. For those listeners that aren't sure what at X means, it's behind the cage, similar to like ice hockey. We do have players that can go behind cage and generate some offense there. So even though we're playing on a soccer-sized field, we're a little bit more of an ice hockey basketball type of sport when you're thinking about offenses and defenses. And Megan Trinitsky, the position that she really flourishes at, is behind at X.
Now, you actually bring up a good point. That was something I was going to say for our listeners that aren't familiar with the game. I was going to get you to make that basketball analogy.
Yeah.
A lot of times you'll hear it referred to, what is it, the fastest sport on 2 feet? Or,
yep,
but,
that's us.
But so just talk about that in a little more detail in layman's terms for our listeners.
Yeah, so, the way I always describe this for listeners is if you've never seen women's lacrosse, we don't wear helmets. Men's lacrosse wears helmets and full pads. Men's lacrosse is like, you know, football with sticks, if we're going to be honest. It's a little more finesse. I'm taking something away from saying that for men's lacrosse, I'm sure. But with the women's game is much more finesse. And to see our game, it is played on what would be a soccer-sized field. Offense, defense, you've got 12 players out there, 11 on the field. We play 7-on-7, basically, in the offensive and defensive zones. And when you think about the play and ball movement and movement itself, think about basketball. And I say hockey, too. We're running screens. We're running picks on ball. We've got different defenses. You might see a team... like this past weekend, we played against a man defense. I have a funny feeling we're going to play up against a couple zone defenses here in the coming weeks. We play both. We have a zone defense that we've been working on the last couple weeks. We've also got a man defense. Different pressures. When you think about basketball, you think like, you know, playing four corners. Well, we've got a ride, a full field ride that we can implement if we need to. So there's a lot of similarities across basketball and ice hockey. You're just playing it on a surface area that is like four or five times the size of those courts and fields.
Coach, taking a look at this year's club, you've already touched on this a little bit, but just talk about some of the strengths thus far and some of the things that you're going to need to improve to see the win total get to where you want it to be this year. I know next up you have Campbell. You guys had a tremendous triple overtime thriller with them a season ago. Unfortunately,
yeah.
The Pirates were on the losing end, 11-10 at Johnson Stadium. So talk about that one, and then after that, I wanted to ask you some more about your 2020 schedule.
Sure, absolutely. So, I was just trying to think. Now I'm just thinking about the Campbell game. You know, for us, I think, you know, from last year to this year, we've just seen a real increase in the production and the number of shots that we're trying to get off in a game. I think right now we're somewhere in the high 30s with a well-balanced offense, you know, with people taking and finishing on 1v1 opportunities, but also feeding and assisting. And I think one of our one of the things we talked a lot about this past preseason was second assists. You know, sometimes it's moving the ball out of the dodge, being that person next to the dodge or to the person that's trying to create space to move it to the opposite side. That second assist for the next dodge has been a huge part of our game that we've really seen increase, grow, just number of shots. And then on the flip side, the stops. Not just goalie saves in and of themselves. We have a freshman goalkeeper in there, Ashley Vernon from New Jersey. Really competitive goalie coming out of Shawnee High School that is a freshman and is doing a great job for us in the net. But our defense itself, that is probably one of the more veteran parts of our program right now, has just really elevated their game. Just the level of focus and execution. And not allowing second chances in finishing on their clears, and getting, you know, and shutting people down early to get our offense more opportunities for production. It's just been a big increase, in and of itself. And I think, you know, we've made conditioning even more of a focus this year than we have in the past. That, you know, now we have the speed to get up and down the field, but we also have the depth on the sideline. Our rosters is a little bit bigger, being year three and not having, you know, tremendous losses to graduation. We have 35, which is normal for women's lacrosse roster. It's larger than we have been in years past, but what we've seen at each level, attack, midi, defense, and in cage, has been a lot of competition to get on the field and practice. And I think anytime you've got that depth and that level of competition at practice, it's challenging your starters. That want to keep starting, you know, just that much more on a day-to-day basis and not just games where they're being challenged.
Taking a look at your 2020 schedule, that's what you have, 17 games, and then I noticed the only teams from the American that are on there, Temple, which is at Johnson Stadium, and then at UConn and at Cincinnati. So I'm assuming that the three of them in East Carolina are the only four programs in the league that have women's lacrosse at this point?
Those are the four that are natural AAC, and then we adopted the University of Florida and Vanderbilt. So there are only two SEC schools that sponsor women's lacrosse right now. So the AAC and the SEC have kind of partnered up, and the AAC is sponsoring the women's lacrosse conference. So Florida and Vanderbilt on our schedule are considered conference games for us as well.
Now that you mentioned that, I remember last year when we talked about this time at the early part of the season, I remember you saying that about Florida and Vandy, because in the Gators, I saw here within the last week or so, they're ranked 12th, so that's a heck of an addition.
And that's probably going to jump to maybe even top six. The Florida Gators just beat the University of Maryland at home, and Maryland hadn't lost a home game in something like 86 games. They're preseason number one or number two, so Florida's going to make an even bigger jump, which just, you know, and Vanderbilt had a great game against Boston College, who was, you know, currently ranked fifth. So the conference itself, the AAC and women's lacrosse, had a really great weekend.
And Vandy came to Johnson Stadium a year ago, so you'll be going to Nashville this year. You have other marquee road games with the likes of Duke and then North Carolina, obviously your alma mater. Tar Heels are ranked number one, and Duke is in the top 20 as well.
Yes, we've got we'll be at Duke. We're at Duke, and then I think it's something like three games later, turn around, and we are at Carolina. Both of which will be just fantastic tests and opportunities for us to get out there. But really, you know, kind of after this weekend, we start a little bit of a gauntlet schedule-wise, just quick turnarounds on games. And, you know, whenever you get, you know, two or three days in between each game, there's not a lot of time to deconstruct things and do a ton of teaching. So we've got to find those moments, even if it's moments in moments. To just keep growing and keep building and teaching our players, you know, that we can come out and put a competitive product on the field.
earlier we were talking about the growth of the sport. You said that the Greenville's J.H. Rose High School has a team, and then D.H. Conley has a club team. So with the growth in the area, just talk about your camps and talk about the opportunity for the young ladies in not only Greenville but surrounding areas to be able to come to ECU and learn about the sport and then develop a passion for the game.
Absolutely. So we host a couple of different camps, the largest of which is in the summer. We have an overnight camp pretty much for our middle school and high school players to come stay on campus at ECU. We stay in the dorm, eat in the dining hall. We walk out to practice just like our team does, which is pretty cool, just to kind of get that not just a lacrosse experience and a lot of teaching and playing, but even just like kind of a collegiate feel of our campus. That's probably one of our largest camps, and that will be June 29th. That's when that starts this summer. But we also have different clinics throughout the year, fall, spring clinics, that are just kind of one-day clinics for players to come out, whether they are prospects or whether they are just trying to get some extra reps and extra play. The other thing we're looking at trying to do is a satellite camp. We want to reach players that maybe don't want to make the drive to Greenville but are living in eastern North Carolina, whether that's the beaches or even someplace, you know, potentially a little further south or more rural in South Carolina, that we can get to them to show them what lacrosse is and give them that opportunity to try it if they never have. And we do offer those camps as well. We offer youth clinics for our local girls. We love seeing them. We've got a good group of players here in Greenville that have really supported us. A lot of those little girls they're not little anymore. Now I feel like they're in middle school. They were at the game this past weekend. So we do. We have a couple of different things, and you can register for all of those on ab3lacrossecamp.com. Just a little bit about us.
And tell everyone where they can follow you on social media, because I know you're on Twitter, and then I'm not sure about Instagram.
Yeah, Twitter and Instagram. I think my actual physical handle is at ASBarnes3 for Twitter. And then this is what happens when you become a head coach and you aren't married yet, and then you get married the next time. So then my Instagram handle is Coach Mandy B. Moore. So, you know, when I took the job, I was Amanda Barnes, and now I'm married with a kid and I'm Amanda Moore.
Yeah, I remember last year we had a good laugh about the Mandy Moore.
Yeah. But, which kids don't even know who Mandy Moore is now.
Right, I was going to say, not that means anything.
No, I make that joke at camps, and everyone's like, who's Mandy Moore? I'm like, come on. I get nothing.
Well, Coach, we certainly appreciate the time this morning. You've been very generous. I certainly urge Pirate Nation to get out of Johnson Stadium. I know you've had some excellent atmospheres there. I haven't been able to make it out living in the western part of the state, but I've watched some of the games online via ecupirates.com, and they're certainly very upbeat and fast-paced and intense, and I would definitely look forward to getting out there sometime sooner rather than later. I was disappointed that I noticed last year, I believe you guys played at Gardner-Webb and also Charlotte, and wasn't able to work out with my son's baseball schedule, but
yeah.
I had hoped to make it out to those, but I definitely will get out there at some point, and we appreciate the visit. We'd love to have you back on sometime down the road and later in the season.
Well, we certainly appreciate your support, Bubba, and looking forward to a few more games here this season, getting after it.
Thanks very much, Coach. Good luck to them, the women's lacrosse team, off to a great start, and hopefully they will continue to do that. Kyle, very happy about that.
Yeah, you know, I hear Coach Mandy Moore and Bubba had a walk to remember.
No doubt about it. And this is us. She's on that show right now. I don't know how she does the NBC show, and she's a coach, she's a wife. I mean, she does it all. So,
gotcha.
Coach, thank you so much for being in East Carolina. I mean, you're a superstar.
Yeah, exactly. It's
no doubt.
It's an honor. It's an honor and a privilege.
Yeah, no doubt. And she's been fantastic. And we have now with 19 coaches, very excited about the administration. Want to give a shout-out again to John Gilbert and Ryan Robinson. I had people in the last couple of days, it's kind of ironic, a couple of different conversations about, wow, how much better the program, as far as the athletic program, is now compared to recent times. So I totally agree and want to give them a shout out. And Kyle, it looks like we've got a lot of great things happening for the podcast upcoming this week. We're going to have Steven Igo is going to be with us. I hope he's talking about the transfers. We're going to find out about that, what's going on there. Brandon Lynch leaving the program, the safeties coach going to the Cleveland Browns. We'll talk about that. Bubba actually had a great get. Joey Molinaro from Indianapolis, he talked to us. He's an
impersonator. Don't you mean Nick Saban?
I mean, I'm sorry, yeah.
No, he means that Ogeron.
Yeah, okay. Coach Ogeron.
He means Mike Lynch.
Colin Cowherd is going to be on the show.
Yeah, he's a comedian, radio personality, and impressionist, and he does a lot of different college football and NFL personalities, and you guys will enjoy that.
We had the opportunity to catch up with Mike Leach, and it was not on the football field, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. So you have to listen to that podcast, the next one, in the next couple of days. You guys have any final thoughts before we go?
Just good luck to the baseball team this week as they play Campbell and take on Georgia Southern. It'd be nice to go 4-0 on the week, but we'll see what happens.
Good luck to our basketball team. They're going to be in Memphis as they're taking on the Tigers, so on the road, so hopefully Joe Dooley can get the second win of the year on the road. And also, good luck. Also, want to give a shout out, Bubba, to our swim team, Coach Jabs. They're in Houston this week, and they've already left, and they start, I believe, is it Thursday? It's coming up in the next day or two.
Try to get Coach Jabs on the show, but yeah, like you're saying, it may even be tomorrow, but either tomorrow or Thursday. Yeah, either tomorrow or Thursday down in Houston. They were already. When I reached out to Jody Jones, the SID in charge of swimming, they had already headed out to Houston yesterday.
They did. Good luck to them, and we'll have him on. Try to have him on next week, and we try to have all the coaches on. So, give the love as much as we can to the different sports programs in East Carolina, guys. Definitely a huge show. Thank you, guys, as always. Want to thank our great guest, of course, Justin Hare, the head coach, baseball coach at Campbell. Big game tomorrow night. And, of course, Coach Moore doing a great job of building the women's lacrosse program in East Carolina. Good luck to them this season. And we'll be back with you in the next couple of days, maybe even overtime tomorrow night. You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.